For decades, the prevailing view of human evolution has been that it's over. That if you stripped off your clothes, you and I would actually look quite a lot like our Stone Age ancestors. Better hairstyles and dental hygiene. But at the University of Wisconsin, paleoanthropologist John Hawks runs a lab that's been coming up with new evidence to the contrary.
This would be an example of what we'd call a robust skull. So a robust skull has got stuff sticking out of it. It's got a brow ridge. You've got this ridge on the back, and there's this bar of bone over it. Teeth are quite large. Actually, let me run just a second. I'll get another skull.
And Strange Champs recently stopped by John Hawks's big, echoey bone lab to look at some human skulls and talk about how humans are evolving. Some changes, he told her, are obvious.
When we look at the kinds of things that skeletally have shifted in the last 10,000 years, you're looking at things that, some of them very noticeable. You know, the brain shrank. We got smaller heads in that last 10,000 years. You know, we're talking about in Europe, the skull reduced in its volume by about 10%. So it's reduced by a lot. Why is it reduced? Well, this is sort of straightforward why it should reduce. The brain uses energy. It's about 20% of your minimum output in terms of energy use. That's a big cost. And if you could sort of cut that down a little bit, you'd have more energy for other stuff.
Or sort of like making a smaller, more efficient car.
Exactly right. It's exactly what it is.
We've evolved to be the hybrids.
It's exactly right. Now, think about how that could happen. It could happen just as it did in cars by getting the same horsepower out of a smaller engine, or it could happen by tolerating less horsepower.
I can't quite figure out if you're saying our brains are more powerful just in smaller cases or whether our brains are in fact lesser
than the brains
of our ancestors.
We don't know is the answer. So if I ask my students, why did the brain get smaller? The first answer is idiocracy. You know, people are getting dumber. The second answer is, well, maybe they're getting more efficient. Right. You know, maybe it's changed because we're doing more with less tissue.
Now, one thing that's striking is that we're sitting here in front of a pile of bones in your bone lab, but we're talking about genetic variation and genetic evolution. It strikes me that the job of a paleoanthropologist must be really different today.
Well, it's absolutely changed. You know, genetics today, you can look at the human genome on the genome browser. Anybody can do this. It's totally free. And you can look at variations in the genome. And so if we're in my lab plotting out parts of the genome that look like they've been impacted by selection, we'd say, well, what do they do?
Are there specific changes you can point to, specific way stations along the way?
Well, I think that, you know, the big event is the first agriculturalists. You know, when we settled down, started living in villages, started eating all these cereals, you know, we're eating wheat, in the New World they're eating corn. This is all stuff that hunter-gatherers are not good at. And so the best examples are things like lactase persistence. It's normal for mammals to drink milk when they're babies, but not when they're grown-ups. And so they, over the course of maturation, lose this ability to digest lactose. Well, some humans have the ability to continue that, the production of the enzyme lactase that lets that happen. That's a mutation. It happened, we now know, at least five times in different ancient human populations, all of them in the last few thousand years.
And why is that?
Because of the advantage. This is a population that depended on dairy animals to a greater or lesser extent, but only after they domesticated cattle, goats, sheep. So it's that domestication that creates a new environment. You're drinking milk because it's available to you. If you could just digest that sugar a little better, then you get a bonus, more energy out of it. And so the environmental change creates the opportunity for a genetic change.
So a genetic variation occurs. Some infants are born with this new gene that lets them digest lactose. Those infants have a better chance of surviving. They pass the gene on, and pretty soon you have a a few generations later, you have a population that can digest milk easily.
Exactly right. So imagine a woman who's pregnant, and she has to maintain a high energy input to maintain a pregnancy or to maintain her own lactation. What difference would it make to get 30% more calories out of milk? It'd make a lot of difference.
Well, so far, in terms of the way humans are evolving, you've mentioned the ability to digest lactose. Mm-hmm. Any other major ways in which humans have evolved?
One of the kinds of genes that I'm real interested in my lab is genes that are related to the hair cells of the inner ears.
Why are you interested in that?
Well, so the inner ear is the part that hears things. And the hair cells don't make hairs. They have tiny, what are called stereocilia on top of them. And those stereocilia are what are essential to receiving sounds mm-hmm. in your ears. And it turns out that about a dozen or 20 of these genes in different human populations have changed under selection in the last 10 to 20,000 years. That's more than you'd expect from chance.
Right, and so why would that be?
So why would it be? Well, we can run hypotheses, right? Hypothesis. The reason why these genes are selected is because humans are adapting to language in some way. You know, they have to hear words better. We know that humans hear a different range of sound sensitivities than chimpanzees do, so we know that there's been change. Maybe we're becoming better at it. Maybe when you start living in cities, you have to be able to recognize different voices better. Mm. And so there's a social aspect to it. Maybe it has to do with the kinds of languages that you're speaking in different populations. And so maybe they're tone languages or not. So lots of hypotheses.
You know, I know anthropologists have a very different sense of time than the rest of us. But when you're talking about human evolution and the fact that it's speeding up, how fast might you actually see that playing out? You know, the proverbial grandparent who said, oh, kids today are not what they used to be. Are they right?
If we look at people that we dig out of the ground 5,000 years ago in Germany, not one of them that we've found so far has the gene that allows lactose digestion.
Just 5,000 years?
Just 5,000 years ago. If we look at people who lived in the Ukraine about 3,000 years ago, about 20% of them had it. Today, in Germany, 80% or higher. That means that 95% of people can digest this. They carry at least one copy of it.
So that's a change that happened in 3,000 years or less.
That's a change that happened in 3,000 years or less. If we measure people's teeth 3,000 years or less, there's been a big difference. I mean, it's that kind of thing where we can say that we are not the same people that the Romans were. We have different genes today. And that's what has been going on, by our estimates, for thousands of human genes.
We're also living through another period of enormous transition as we move, you know, out of the old industrial economy and civilization into the new world of multimedia. Is that likely to produce another big, fast pile of evolutionary changes?
The easy answer to that question, but the one that sort of ends the discussion, is, well, we're going to start genetically engineering people. And then, of course, things speed up because the potential for change is much higher. You know, now it's not just you wait for the random change to happen. You choose the change. And once that takes off, you can only imagine what will be possible.
John Hawks is a paleoanthropologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He talked with Anne Strainchance in his lab.